What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Mongols podcast. I'm Mike. He's Kev. Coming up on today's show, we'll recap the Hounds' 1-0 loss to Cincy. We'll talk about the upcoming Open Cup match, and we'll briefly touch on next weekend's game against TFC 2. Let's go!
Can you believe that, guys?
No, I mean, that is the craziest sequence of events we've seen in quite a period of time.
In the top right corner, gentlemen. Out to the middle. Back to
before we actually get into the Cincy recap, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the online viewing party that we had with our special guests, Elizabeth and Josh Brokaw from the Steel Army, John Krasinski of Pittsburgh Soccer Report, and Sean McPherson of Pen 97. It was a great time. We sat around and we were on a Google Hangout. And we just watched the game together. And so there's a lot of discussion of like, oh, you know, what's the starting lineup like? Oh, what do you think about that? And as the game wore on, it was, oh, why are we doing that? Or, oh, that was a great play. And there was just a lot of back and forth banter and making fun of Kevin's wannabe V-neck t-shirt. And it was a good time.
No, they're all really cool people. I mean, I really enjoyed watching the game with them. And I learned actually a lot from everyone there. I mean, everyone has... you know, their own pieces of information that are extremely valuable. Yeah, I mean, I learned a lot just from everyone. And yeah, it was great to get everyone's take on the game. And it was just fun to hang out with them. It was really cool.
Yeah, it's really neat when you have a group of people who all have a shared passion for the team and also have a shared passion for the sport. And I don't want to say are knowledgeable. Everybody there was knowledgeable. You don't have to be knowledgeable to contribute to something like this. But everybody was able to bring their own thing to the table, which was awesome. We learned a lot, like you said.
And it made the 1-0 loss much more bearable. I don't know. Like, I feel like if I'm sitting there by myself watching it and, you know, in my room, and then, yeah, that becomes a lot more depressing. It was still depressing. It's not fun losing 1-0, but it seemed better with them around. Yeah, so that was cool.
Yeah. And we all agreed that this won't be the last time we do this. I think it was a positive experience for everyone. So we'll just, I don't think we're going to do it for every game this season, but this won't be the last time that we do it. So if you missed out on it, or if you want to participate and be one of the panelists and sort of be able to communicate with us, let us know. It was a great experience. We could line up a few other people for the next one. I think there's a max limit of 10 participants that can actually talk and communicate together. And then everybody else can actually watch it live on YouTube and submit questions and comments. And then we could read those on air all while we're watching the same game. So you could sort of be part of the conversation with us, which is great. If you missed this one, it is available on our YouTube channel, and I will actually put the link in the show notes for this show as well. So you can always just click on it if you want to see what we look like. You know, we weren't, I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. Everybody else looked fantastic. I probably look like I just rolled out of bed, but that's sort of what you get when you're, doing a Google Hangout.
I just got done cleaning with my fake white V-neck t-shirt. So,
we gave Kevin a hard time about that. It was great. So, yeah, you can check it out. Let's get into the game. So, as Kevin mentioned, we lost 1-0 to Cincinnati in Cincinnati. Cincy announced that they had sold 23,000 plus tickets, which is fantastic if that's true. It didn't look like it in the stands. One of the things we talked with, John about was how some of the teams will doctor those numbers, whether or not those are gate numbers, whether those are tickets sold, who knows. Regardless, 23,000 is a lot. So kudos to Cincy for at least getting close to that when, you know, we have, a 5,000-seat stadium that we struggle to sell up from time to time. The Hounds lineup, we had predicted coming into this game that we thought that a draw would be a good result. In hindsight, a draw would be a good result and that we would sit back and sort of just weather the storm and maybe take our chances. And the Hounds actually came out and played the opposite. They went with something that looked like a 4-2-1-3, where you had the big news being Mauricio Vargas was in goal over Hunter Gilstrap. And then you had Hollingsworth, Hunt, Campbell, Green across the back, Okai and Branson in front of them, Maloto in front of them, and then three guys up top, Russell, Herzog, and Kerr, which was interesting.
And even, I don't know. See, now, two things. I mean, the formation might indicate that the Riverhounds might have maybe lined up to go for it. But, I mean, I remember when watching the game, we were saying, you know, 15 minutes in, not a lot has happened up to that point, and we didn't necessarily look like we were carving out a lot of chances. So even though maybe the formation or how we set up maybe suggest, I don't know, maybe suggest an attacking intent, especially for the first 15 minutes, I thought it was a pretty stale game. Mm-hmm. Neither team looking head and shoulders above the other. But go ahead, yeah.
I was just going to say that especially missing Romeo Parks, this was the first game without him. He has scored the vast majority of our goals this year. It was interesting to see how the Hounds plan to compensate for that. And it seemed that having a front line of Drew Russell, Corey Hertzog, Kevin Kerr was an attempt to sort of stack the numbers and at least give ourselves more chances. Because we were doing the hangout, I didn't take my normal detailed notes, but I do have a number of takeaways. The one big thing is that Cincy's goal came around the 30th minute, and really it was a goal that I think had the shot happened later in the game, Vargas would have made the save. I think Vargas took a little while to warm up, but Kev, you have a point.
Yeah, no, I mean, he very much grew into the game, I think. Yeah, I thought it was... I don't know if I'm being harsh on saying it was a weak goal let in.
I think he would say it was a weak goal let in. I mean, it wasn't...
I think John pointed out pretty nicely in the build-up to the goal, I think Branton got kind of caught out a bit, and since he kind of played a 1-2 around him. And, yeah, I mean, it was a close-range shot, so he didn't have a lot of time to react. But he goes down, and instead of... It wasn't the hardest shot, so instead of kind of claiming it, it kind of bounces right back to the Cincinnati player who shot it, and then they just put it in the bottom right corner. But after that, I mean, honestly, you worry about a young goalkeeper making their first start away from home in a big stadium against a good team. It probably wasn't his first shot that he saved, but it was close. He wasn't making a bunch of saves up until that goal. And so one of the first times he's being tested, he lets in a goal. I mean, all signs point to him having somewhat of a, you know, collapsed game. And, you know, then it's
mentally just, mental breakdown.
Exactly.
Something like that.
And he absolutely didn't do that. He bounced back really well, making a lot of really good saves, a lot of athletic saves. Still not, you know, we're saying Hounds goalkeepers don't, you know, they need to learn to kick the ball a little better. But, you know, I'm fine with that. If he's making the saves like he did, I thought Vargas had a really good game.
Yeah, that was one of my takeaways as we get into the takeaways, was that Vargas got better as the game went on. I think his confidence grew, and I think he showed some really good things. I think it'll be interesting to sort of see how he progresses through the next few games. I think you have to give him more time based on what we saw. And sort of see how this develops. And so I thought he did a good job.
I will say, jumping to another player with Kerr, I kind of have to eat my own words here. I thought he actually had a really good game. Before this game, I was calling for him to be dropped. He came in, and I thought he played fairly well. I think one of the only criticisms I would have of him, I mean, he did seem to be at the center of everything positive for the Riverhounds going forward. I think his chance was one of the first real chances of the game, where he kind of cuts inside and kind of pushes through two of Cincinnati's defenders and gets like a left-footed shot off at the keeper who comes out and claims the ball. The only thing, I don't know an identity for almost any of these Riverhounds players. I can't look to any one of these Riverhounds players and say, yeah, I know what I'm going to get out of this player for this game. Kerr kind of being one of them. I think he drifts out of games too much. He'll kind of be on the fringes for 5, 10 minutes, not pop up, and then have a big five. And then he'll go on the fringe again for another 10 minutes. You know, he has talent, he has skill, he can make things happen, and you just want to see a player like that maybe get on the ball a bit more. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to expect from a lot of these players. And hopefully that the changes, maybe that comes with more consistency as far as playing position. But I don't know. Hopefully we'll see that kind of evolve into the next game. But
I think two players that we absolutely have seen consistency from and have done a really good job is Sergio Campbell and Willie Hunt. That was one of the things, is that the defense played their butts off in this game. And I think in front of Vargas, they did a really solid job of cleaning things up. And again, we've said this before, when you're saying that your defense and your goalie have had outstanding games, that's probably not the best thing from a team standpoint. But I think that it gives, knowing that you have a solid goalie and knowing that you have those two guys back there sort of holding it down, gives you a lot of freedom going forward. And I thought they did a fantastic job.
Well, it sounds obvious too, but when your team's winning 1-0, 2-1 games, then saying, yeah, your keeper and your two center backs are your best players, that sounds a lot better and makes you feel that much more comfortable, because as long as you score a goal, then you know, you're comfortable and confident in getting a positive result. On the flip side, you know, if you keep losing games and you keep saying your goalkeeper and your center back are your best players, then yeah, then it's a completely different story. But no, I think in the hangouts, I think we were saying, or at least a couple of people were saying, that they thought Campbell was the man of the match. And yeah, I mean, he was absolutely up there. Maybe Vargas is also in contention for that. But yeah, I think that little triangle, or at least the two of Campbell and Hunt, they've been very consistent and solid across all these games.
All season,
But now adding in a potential third cog with Vargas, I think that could be something, you know, something to build from, hopefully. Maybe it's the start of a core team that can then grow out from there.
Yeah. A few other takeaways. I agree with everything you said. A few other takeaways. First off, Cincy is a beatable team. You know, we've said going into this that we thought they were a beatable team, even though they're fourth in the standings. I didn't see where they were after this game, but we hung with them even after a number of notable knocks against us. You know, the first knock being we lose Parks, and now we need to pick up from that. The second knock being Hollingsworth took a shot to the head, which knocked him out for a few minutes, which we thought might be a concussion. And then he sort of went back in, and after a few minutes, just sort of laid back down. There hasn't been any official word about whether or not he had a concussion or not, but everything sort of points to he had a concussion. They sort of walked him off the field. They took him back to Cincy's locker room so they could actually assess him. He didn't come back into the game. If we lose Hollingsworth in addition to Parks, I mean, Hollingsworth was the other one, I think, coming into this season, early in the season, that showed flashes of being that player that could sort of just, you know, bust his butt and make things happen. And I think losing him could be another knock.
Yeah, I think up to that point where he got the concussion, you know,
supposed concussion.
He was putting in a man of the match performance. He was very solid going forward, and he made at least two, I can remember off the top of my head, great defensive plays. And maybe, you know, if his, you know, if what forced him off the field, let's call it an injury, if that's not too long term, we've seen him kind of float around in a couple different positions. It's left back could very much be his position going forward. It seems like he's the most comfortable there. The only thing I was skeptical about in him kind of walking down that position was his defensive capabilities. But I mean, even in the 30 minutes or so that he was on the pitch, I think he's, I don't know, at least to me, he proved enough to say, yeah, he's stout enough defensively where, you know, I feel comfortable putting him there, and then we can get a lot from him going forward as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that him playing in that left back position comes down to the type of team that we want to be. I think this team is still lacking some form of identity. And one of the things that we brought up is this, the way that we want to play. We say that we're a possession team. We've talked about this before, yet one of the big striking differences that we saw time and time again in this game is whenever we would get into their final third, we would do these long throw-ins to get the ball into the box as if we were taking a corner kick. But then when we actually got an opportunity to take a corner kick, rather than trying to put it in the box like we're doing with the throw-ins, we're doing short little corner kicks and then trying to work it in. So what are we trying to do here? Are we trying to work the ball into their box using a possession style? And, you know, as John mentioned, when that happens, you almost sort of hope for a foul or you make something happen. Or are we just trying to chuck the ball in and see if we can't get ahead on it and make something happen? It seemed like on throw-ins, we're like, let's just chuck it in and see what happens. And on corner kicks, we're like, well, let's try to work it in. There was no consistent...
Which you think it'd be the opposite, right?
Right.
You think on corners, you'd want to whip it in, and throw-ins, you just play it short. That was very odd. Let me ask you this before we go on to... We don't have to linger on this too much. But, I mean, once again... I think things needed to change a bit with the drop out of Parks. And if you're looking to try to get goals, then, you know, you have to do something maybe tactically different to give you more of a chance to get more goals in the game. But, I mean, we have this is another game where both Green and Hollingsworth are now fullbacks, which I don't think we've seen that A combination before, and B, I don't think Green or Hollingsworth has played fullback recently. I think they had some starts at the beginning of the season at fullback. And then on top of that, I mean, obviously we've seen Russell going forward, but now in this game it did very much seem like, you know, no, you're a forward. Don't even worry about being, you know, this kind of defensive wide midfielder or fullback that likes to get up. No, you're up there, and we want to like get numbers from you. And the same thing with Kerr, where he was kind of pushed up and out wide. I mean, like I said, there are multiple times where he would just kind of hold his position out on the right wing. He wasn't a midfielder that drifted out to the right. He was a right inside forward essentially. And I don't know. I mean that's a pretty radical change. And like I said, I understand you need to do something different to try to compensate for the loss of Parks. But I don't know. I mean that seems like a pretty drastic different to me.
I think that you have to do something. I mean, this is now our seventh game, and if you remove Parks from the equation, we've scored two goals over the course of seven games. Okay. You have to get scoring chances from somewhere. And aside from Kerr's one chance that he almost made on his own, where it was like, let me dribble through the whole box and take a shot, we really didn't have any other real scoring chances in this game. So I think that what you have to do is we have to switch from having just a single lone striker, because I almost feel bad for Herzog, because he's just getting beat up every game. He's getting high up the field, and he's just taking knocks to get the rest of the team up the field, but he can't do it himself.
And we talked about this in the hangout too. I don't think Herzog is a lone striker. I think he's a forward that plays better when he has someone else to be played with. And it actually gets me thinking back to when we had a chat with him earlier on in the season, and how he was saying, yeah, one of the most difficult things about maybe playing as a lone striker in that formation, it's just you kind of have to constantly be aware of A, to kind of stay in that position, and B, just continue to work hard. Because I think you would have a tendency to maybe want to drop a bit deeper and get yourself involved in play. Or in that position, I mean, you need to stay forward so your team has an outlet ball and has a pass to make. Look, he's a talented player, and I'm not saying he absolutely can't play in a one. I think you just get maybe get more out of him when you have a, you know, identifiable second or just another attacking option that can get in and around him, and they can play off of each other.
And I think that we had talked about this a little bit as well, that it was encouraging that having three forwards is sort of that acknowledgement of like, yes, I know we need more scoring chances. Let's put more bodies forward and try to generate more scoring chances. But exactly as you said, I remember talking to Corey and he said, you know, you can go 5-minute stretches without touching the ball as a forward. And that's maddening. And that's difficult when you have, not saying that Herzog isn't talented, but when you have players like Kerr and Russell who are very talented, and by putting them up forward, if you're taking them out of the game, like you had mentioned, they're sort of out there on the wings, and part of their job is when they don't have the ball to keep their defense on. So they have a job to do even if they aren't involved in the buildup. But you're essentially removing them from the games. You could have other players in that position that are keeping that defense honest and have Kerr and Russell. Honestly, I think that Russell is much more dangerous attacking out of the midfield, where he can carry the ball into space and then play off to a Herzog, play off to a Kerr, not being that lone target where he's the last man to get the ball. So obviously Coach Steffens is seeing something in practice that we're not seeing. We're not there. But there's a number of other players that could potentially work their way into this team to try to give it that offensive spark. We've got nowhere to go but up from here. I mean, we can keep going down, but we're sort of as far down as we could go. So you might as well start trying something now. And we have the Open Cup match coming up. This could be the perfect time to start doing it. And this is where, you know, I don't want to say Cinderella stories, but this is where almost, you know, those unheard of superstars are born, where you have a team that's down in the bottom and all of a sudden somebody says, I'm done, I'm stepping up. And it may be somebody that's a no name, like, you know, an Alex Harley, who we've talked about on the show, but at the same time hasn't seen a lot of time. He could step in and get himself a goal and provide some feistiness. And all of a sudden,
speaking of which, I mean, when he came on, I think he got like 10 minutes at the end of that game. There was one moment in particular. I think he just like went past like two Cincinnati players. Like it was nothing.
He didn't give up on the ball. Like somebody tried to take the ball and he just kept hassling them and won it back.
But like you said, I mean, you know, look, Coach Stevens sees them all the time in practice. He sees the things that we don't see. He obviously knows a lot more than we do, but you know, we're a podcast. We have fun speculating. This is what we do. So
yes, we like I said, we have fun playing fantasy soccer.
Yeah.
So we'll see what the Hounds have to do. Obviously, another difficult loss as we continue to search for answers. It seems like we may have figured it out in the back, which sometimes is the most difficult thing to do. So now we just need to build forward and figure out that offense. We have two more shots at Cincy, September 14th and September 28th. Those are our last two home games of the season, with the 28th being our last regular season game overall. So if Cincy wants a rivalry, here we go. I think that when they come to town, we need to make sure that we are packing Highmark Stadium just like they supposedly packed their stadium, and give them a game. And I think that by that time, we'll have some stuff figured out, and we can win both of
them. And just boo McLaughlin. That's all you need to know.
Boo McLaughlin. McLaughlin was the one who scored their game, or scored their goal. Looked like a 14-year-old. Was
flopping everywhere.
Flopping everywhere. He was crying when he got subbed out late in the game.
Looks like a young Tony Cruz, if anyone knows who that
looks. Yes, we were making jokes about, you know, he had to leave because his mom was leaving in the van and he had to ride home. So all the more reason to go check out that YouTube video and watch along with us if you haven't seen the game yet. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk U.S. Open Cup and go from there.
We'd love to hear from you. Find us on Twitter at Mongols, on Facebook at Mongols, and email us at howl@mongols.com. Any questions, comments, or reactions read on air could win you your own Riverhounds jersey. Thanks!
And we're back. So, U.S. Open Cup. Since he's behind us, we have two games coming up this week. The first being on Wednesday. It's a U.S. Open Cup match. We've talked about the U.S. Open Cup in previous shows. It's essentially a tournament where amateur teams play each other. They then work their way up and they play against USL teams who then work their way up and eventually can play MLS teams to try to determine who the best team in the US is. And the idea is to span that, you know, amateur all the way up to pro. It's a single elimination tournament. Some teams take it more seriously than others. Essentially, the first round was played last week while we were recording. Lansdowne Boys FC ended up beating the Long Island Rough Riders 2-1. So that means Lansdowne Boys are coming to Highmark Stadium this Wednesday, 7 p.m. For the second round matchup. the game will likely be streaming at the same time as we're recording Wednesday night, so we'll probably be bouncing back and forth and giving you updates, assuming that it's online. Lansdowne made their way into the second round, like I said, by winning 2-1. Ovin Oakley scored for the boys 8 minutes in. Rough Riders tied it early in the second, and really the game just seemed to be pretty even from there. It looked like they were going to go into penalties after overtime, but the boys were actually awarded a PK in the 126th minute, which is
heartbreaking
if you were the Rough Riders. But they ended up making it through. This is the boys' first appearance in the U.S. Open Cup. Kev, what do we want to see from the Hounds in this game?
I mean, so I don't, it's hard to say the season's a wash or anything like that. I'm not saying that, but with the run of results that we've had, it just makes this Open Cup tournament that much more important. I mean, I think we should have put a relatively high amount of importance on this game, even at the beginning of the season when a ball hasn't been kicked yet. But yeah, especially in light of everything that's happening, I think this is a real opportunity for, yeah, to get some positive atmosphere back in the club. You know, if we can make a good run in this tournament, you know, it could really start changing the season around. And not only give us something to be happy about, and you know, the potential opportunity for a trophy in the cabinet at the end of the season, but that can have knock-on effects in league games as well, which is obviously important.
Coach Steffens mentioned in a press conference prior to the Cincy game that he was going to give some other players some time, you know, because this game, we should win this game pretty handily. So he's looking to give some other players some time. How do you think we approach this, considering what happened in Cincy and considering how the season's gone so far, that we are now 0-4-3? Do we roll out our starting lineup in this game, knowing that TFC2 is coming to town on Saturday?
Oh, it's tough. I mean, so, yeah, you just said TFC coming to town on the weekend. We just had this game yesterday on Saturday. I mean, so taking this in context, I mean, this is a busy part of the schedule. So I think just naturally you're going to have to make some changes. But at the same time, I mean, I would strongly go against the idea of making, you know, a full house change and putting 11 new players on the pitch. I think this needs to be, you know, sub where you think you need to as far as legs are concerned. But I absolutely think we need to get our best players possible who have the energy to play in this game, to play in this game. I think this is a really great opportunity for people like Harley, where I think a lot of us have been eager to see what he's about. And in the few times that I've seen him play, he's looked really positive. So this could be a game where, you know, okay, one, go show your dominance. Two, you know, give me a tough decision to make when I'm making the lineup for TFC2 on Saturday. I think a lot of these players who are on the fringes can use this game to kind of push their way into the starting lineup. And, you know, there's no better time than now. I mean, it's not like we have a starting 11 that's winning week in, week out. And even if you have a great game on Wednesday, look, we already have a starting 11 that's winning a lot. No, that's not the case. You know, none of the players right now in the starting 11 are penciled in for a guarantee, first name on the team sheet. Everyone has something to prove. And so, yeah, I think this is a great game to A, prove that, and B, yeah, but not, you know, throwing all the backups in. So I'd like to see a mix, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I'd say the only two players that, in my mind, are safe in the positions they're in are Willie Hunt and Sergio Campbell.
Yeah,
I think everybody else could be played anywhere, including the bench. I think you approach this game almost as if it's a warm-up for TFC2. So it's, we've got stuff we got to figure out. We need to generate some scoring chances, which we should have plenty in this game. And so therefore, yes, you don't want to push the guys too hard, but there's a lot this team needs to figure out still, 7 games in.
I think simultaneously, though, I don't know, you use the term warm-up. I don't like that idea of saying, oh, this is just a warm-up. I mean, this needs to be treated as a game that you must go out and win. And this isn't like a preseason game or go out there and stretch your legs or practice or whatever. This is a you need to take this extremely seriously, and get the first win of the season.
Yeah, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it as a warm up in the sense of how you approach the game. I do mean it as you approach the game. I'm trying to think of how to articulate this. I mean it.
I think I get what you're saying.
This is a competitive match that we have before our next league game. So what you need to do is use this as an opportunity to figure some stuff out. So this is almost a gift. Like here is another competitive game before your next league game. Use this to try to figure some of that stuff out. So when we get to Saturday, we have some idea of how we're going to be generating more chances.
At the same time, though, I would be cautious of being too experimental in this game. Because, like I said, I think this needs to be something where, you know, yeah, I don't know. You need to beat the teams that you should be beating. It's just an obvious statement, but yeah, I think hopefully you're getting what I'm trying to put down here.
I get absolutely what you're trying to put down, but I would also say that the lineup to date has been what I would almost deem as experimental. We have not seen the same starting 11 for the first 7 games. So to see some, I don't want to say some consistency, but even though it didn't work out
in the Cincy game. I'd like to see some consistency.
But what I'm saying is, even if it didn't work out in the Cincy game, if we decided to roll out a 4-2-1-3, I'd go, well, okay, at least we're saying that's what we're doing and we're going to figure this out, regardless of who's in those positions. I would love to see the same people in the same positions if we can figure out a way to generate chances. But I'm not a gambler, but I would almost bet that we're probably not going to see somebody like Drew Russell up on the front line again. You know, or obviously with Marshall Hollingsworth out, there's an opportunity for somebody else to move back there, whether that's Drew Russell sliding back into that position. And now maybe you have somebody like an Isaiah Schaefer or a Caleb Postlewaite that's starting on the other side on defense. This is not going to be the same lineup that we saw this past weekend, but we need to start seeing us move in that direction. And for God's sakes, let's give Mike Green a position. Like, please.
I really want to give him a big hug. He's Mike Green. I'm feeling for him. Maybe the last thing I'll say on this is, yeah, I think in order to fix some of these problems that's happening, I think you can go about it in one of two ways. One, you could say, look, I have my main structure here in place, you know, I need to fill this hole, and instead of tinkering around it, I'm just going to put a player there that maybe necessarily that's not like his position, but at least it allows me to keep the rest of the structure in place and how I want to play it. And then kind of option two for how you kind of go about this is, okay, well, let me tinker here and maybe kind of slightly change this and kind of put that in position. But because I slightly changed this, now I have to slightly change this, and now I have to slightly change this, and now I have to slightly change this. And so you kind of get this domino effect where you get more players, I guess, maybe playing in familiar positions, but not like their... Not their own positions, but also not how they enjoy playing. Whereas, you know, the first option is, you know, you still keep 10 of your players, I don't want to say happy, but you keep 10 of your players in positions where you want to play them, and maybe you're just sacrificing this one position, this one player for the short term, and maybe they grow into that position or whatever. And it seems like right now the Riverhounds are kind of taking option two, where they'll tinker a little bit here to kind of satisfy that, and then they need to kind of put out this fire, and then they need to put out this fire, and then, you know. And so, I don't know. I'm interested to see how that continues to play out. Maybe the players kind of just grow into those slightly tinkered with positions over time. Maybe we need to go back to something where players are playing in their natural positions, and we just maybe kind of sacrifice the one position that we need to fill. I don't know. I mean, because we talked about, you know, Green, I think, played two or three different positions in this game, has started in multiple positions over the course of a season. Same thing with Kerr. Same thing with Hollingsworth, Russell. So, yeah, I don't know. That's just been the biggest thing on my mind, I think, over the course of these six or seven games.
And it's clear that the talent is there. Like, those four players that you just named are all skilled players. The difference is that when they don't have clearly defined roles within whatever system it is that we're playing, and they're constantly shifting roles, that doesn't allow them to get acclimated and to play together as a team. It harkens back to, you know, the Miracle on Ice story, where Coach Brooks basically said, you know, I'm not looking for the best players, I'm looking for the right ones. And so it's,
I love
you can
line.
Take, this is why all-star teams and all-star games are so terrible to watch. Yes, you may have the best players, but they don't play together in those positions, and therefore they don't work together as well. I'd love to see these players start to nail down, you know, some, just some semblance of a position so they can start to build that cohesion.
Wait, I mean, following up with the right players, you know, not the best players, the right players, two examples in world football. One, Leicester City, who just won the Premier League. Obviously, they don't have the best players, but it works for the system they have. Two, I would say Atletico Madrid, where in a league where that's dominated by teams like Barcelona and Real Madrid with ridiculous payrolls and the greatest players in the world, Atletico are right up there with them because of the system that they play, and the players fit into that system perfectly. I'm very passionate about that.
No, you're fine. So I'm going to throw this out there. Considering what we've just talked about in terms of what we would like to see out of this game, being more of a, let's use this as an opportunity to figure out a system to gel, to work together as a team. If we lose this game, does that change your perception of the team more so than if we get a win? Like, it's one of those things where you always say that you learn more from a loss than you do a win, right? In this case, the U.S. Open Cup is sort of this outlier because it's not part of the regular season. If we win this game, it's going to be very easy to go, hey, we got our stuff figured out, we got a few goals, all right, bring on TFC. If we lose this game, is it time to go, ah, crud? Like, now, like, we just lost to an amateur team, regardless of what happened on the field.
I think if we lose this game, we learn absolutely nothing, and it just reinforces what we already know, even to a greater extent. And that's what I'm worried about. I think there's very little to learn from a loss from this game. Yeah. No, does that make sense? I don't know. Yeah. I think there's, I for example, I don't think if we go out with maybe a radically different idea, philosophy, system, players, whatever, and we lose, I don't think we can go back and take significant lessons learned from saying, okay, well, we know that formation doesn't work, or okay, we know that player in that position doesn't work. Because I think we've seen enough examples of that over the past, you know, six or seven games where, you know, there have been enough lessons to learn. And I don't think we learn much from this game other than just, yeah, a massive deflating, demoralizing defeat. Because, I mean, that's, let's be honest, that's what it would be. If we lost this game, that would be a huge punch in the gut.
I'm really hoping that we get to Wednesday. We're not sitting here going, oh my gosh, what is that?
Well, we'd be live updating essentially while we podcast.
Yeah, we'd be live updating. So if our demeanor just completely drops off on Wednesday, you know why. In all fairness, I mean, Lansdowne is it's an amateur team. But at the same time, considering how much time they've had together as amateurs, I almost see one of our academy teams should be able to beat them just from the standpoint of playing within a system, growing up through a system, playing together constantly. So I agree. I think we have to get a win out of this game. And if we don't, there are some big things that we need to fix.
Yeah.
The winner of this game will go on to play the winner of the Southie FC from Massachusetts game versus Rochester Rhinos. That game is played on the same day, on the 18th. If Rochester wins and we win, then we'll travel to Rochester to take on the Rhinos on June 1st. If Southie FC wins, which, again, that would be awesome, they'll come to Highmark Stadium on June 1st to play us. Again, assuming that we win. So a lot to sort of take away from this game, which we should win, but could be very interesting to watch to sort of see how things play out. So that's a little bit about the U.S. Open Cup. We mentioned on Wednesday's show, we're going to preview the game this weekend with TFC 2. This will be the second and last time that we play them this season. The first time that they're traveling to Highmark Stadium this season. So that'll be an exciting game to get to. We'll talk about any sort of promotions, anything like that on Wednesday. We may also have a special guest joining us on Wednesday. So that's a little teaser. It's not Kevin. Don't worry. He's here all the time. I know, right? My money was on you, but no, we may actually have another special guest. Otherwise, I think that, it's not the best start to the season, but at the same time, the past 2 out of 3 years, this is how we've started the season, and we found a way to turn it around. So it's possible. We just have a lot of questions that need to be answered, and I think these next few games are going to be critical to answering those questions. And if we can answer them, no team that we've seen thus far is unbeatable. So it could still be a very exciting season. We just need to buckle up and get ready. Kev, on that note, anything else from you?
Let's just get that first W on Wednesday.
Let's do it. Let's do it. All right. So for Kev, I am Mike. We'll talk to you very, very soon.
Cheers.